This is FM 2.0 with the Don, Dean, Stormy, and the Grizz. Forever music.
Brett Kissel.
Hey, guys.
The King of Canada.
Hey. Far from the King of Canada. But how much fun were those ladies, eh?
Oh, wow, yeah.
You like, missed it, Brett. They
oh, my gosh.
Acapella. They were singing a cappella for us, and we were just like,
ooh, that's God. Phenomenal. You guys have so many great guests, you know, over obviously the course of this platform. So I just appreciate that you've let me be a repeat customer, you know, over the years.
You're amazing, Brett. Are you kidding? Now, you haven't met Dean yet.
I haven't gotten a chance to.
I'm the newbie.
Yeah, Stormy was here, and then the system kicked her out, and she can't get back in. But Stormy was here. She's watching us.
Well, you got to make sure you say hi to Stormy for me. Well, obviously, I just did it. But Dean, yeah, how long you been running the ship here now?
I just sit in the seat. What, month and a half, maybe, you and I've been interviewing.
Yeah.
People.
So Brett, it's interesting. You know, it started with Grizz and I, then Stormy. Now Dean is really big on TikTok. He does a lot of great documentary videos, and we just started teaming up doing interviews. He's on Sirius XM. He's got three shows there. He's got Strike TV. So Dean, and then when you hear him talk, obviously you hear why he's on radio, and he's got music knowledge. So that's why this is working so well. And now we got you, because your Compass project, I'm obsessed with.
Thank you.
Because I swear, the songs that you've put out, you know, sometimes you could put, you know, this is like a big concept you're doing, the Compass project, and every Compass project, and everybody doesn't know, Brett's taking on putting out four albums around the theme of the Compass project, each being a direction. The South album is out, has been out, and then the East album is out. What's next? South? No, West?
Yeah, the next one is going to be the West one. It's going to come out actually in a few weeks, on November the 1st, is I believe when we're going to release it. And it's a super country record. Like, I'm talking stone cold country. We have a Western swing song. We've got some great covers. A song of Charlie Rich's Behind Closed Doors, which is one of my favorites. And Wichita Lineman, which is amazing.
Nice.
So I love that song. And you know what's really unique is that after recording that song, and when we used the symphony orchestra up in Canada, there have been a few symphonies that heard that I was in the symphony business. I don't know how this got around. But I got a gig booked for the Calgary Philharmonic Orchestra up in Calgary. It's one of the most incredible symphonies in our nation, if not the very best. And they invited me to come and perform two nights there. So we're going to play a lot of my music, but also, of course, Wichita Lineman is going to be, it's going to be a really important song in the set list.
Wow. Dude, look at you. Every time you come on here.
Cowboy cool, ethics. Eh?
Cowboy ethics.
Cowboy ethics.
You know what I love about that? In an era where all you hear is don't do albums, just do singles. I love that. Not only are you doing an album, you're doing a multi-album project. I mean, that's kind of like you just, you know, flipping the industry off, or anybody that's saying it, going, no, I'm gonna stick with the album, because I love albums. I hate hearing when people say don't do an album, just do singles.
Well, I think the reality is that you have to look at it in two different ways. Option A is to do it the economical way. And the economical way for an artist and a record label is to just do a song at a time, a single. However, you're not really investing in the art. And the art, because this is a creative business, and I am truly a creative entrepreneur. So the business of music and the music business go hand in hand. So I understand the economics of it, but you're also creating art, you're telling a story, you're letting fans that already know you, or you're creating a relationship with new people who will make new fans, and you're doing that through your art. And the only way to do that is if you have an opportunity to record more songs and do something unique in the way that I'm doing it. So I love doing this, and I really miss out when an artist like Blake Shelton, for example, says, yeah, I'm not going to do records anymore, I'm just going to do singles. Well, no, it's the album cuts that really allowed me to know who you really are. And it's the album cuts on the George Strait, you know, records and the Brooks and Dunn records that we got to figure out who these guys really are. So if you're just doing singles, who are you really? We don't know if we know that as a fan. So that's why it's important for me to put out all this material. Also celebrating 10 years in the business too. So it kind of made sense.
Yeah, you know, when I'm on Deep Tracks on Sirius XM is one of the channels I host. And between Rewind Vinyl and Deep Tracks, there is a difference. If I ask a question on Rewind and Vinyl, I'll get some people to send me emails or send me some messages. If I ask it on Deep Tracks, I get a ton of responses. I mean, these are the people that love those album tracks that are not the hit singles. They love to talk about music. So yeah, there's a lot of people out there that love that.
You know, I think I agree with you, and I love that there's great response when you are on Deep Tracks. One of the challenges I see is that as fans get younger and a new wave and a new generation of listeners comes into the fold, they never knew albums. My little cousins, my sister-in-law, they never knew albums. They just know singles. And I think it's like, I'm actually here in Nashville right now. I'm about to go watch Dean Lewis play at the Brooklyn Bowl. And I'm really excited about this show because I only know one song of Dean's, and it goes, "It comes and goes in waves." And I love that song, but I want to know more about him. So I want to know the deep cuts and these deep tracks. So I'm really hopeful that this new generation of listeners can get behind artists and their entire catalog or whatever it is that they may have, and not just be a singles business.
Now, are you were talking about symphonies. Are you a lover of classical music?
So classical music in general, I would say, well, do I love it? Yes. Do I respect it? Yes. Do I know much about it? No. I know Mozart. I know Beethoven. I know Canon in D. I know the William Tell Overture. I don't know. That might be it, you know? So for me, getting a chance to do something with a symphony is very unique, because the only time I really got into it was through Glenn Campbell music.
Yeah, as that, because when you were talking about the album and the full experience, like, I'll probably say I love classical music as much as I love rock. And one of the things about it is, because you have to invest in the experience. You know, you listen to something like Tchaikovsky's 1812. It's not a 2-minute pop song. You get to the hook. You invest in the experience. And that, as you're talking about the album and the experience, that's what it was making me think of.
No, it's a beautiful way to really depict what music can be. And I think it's absolutely fascinating to immerse yourself in that experience, which is why I have been to several symphonies. And it's one of the things, symphony or opera is something that I really try to do, especially when I'm in Europe, because I can see the great rock shows here in America. I can see the great country shows in Canada and the United States, but watching true opera or watching true classical music in the form of a symphony and an orchestra is a little extra special when you're in London or when you're in France or when you're in Italy.
Yeah, I can imagine. I haven't had that experience. I've watched a lot of symphonies here stateside, but I haven't had that.
That's pretty awesome.
And Wichita Lineman, you know, I had on Bobby, oh my God, what's his name? Bobby Tomberlin.
Okay.
Great songwriter, right? Wrote some amazing songs. But we were talking about Wichita Lineman. And have you ever really sat and listened to the lyrics of that song? About, you know, he's up on the line and the wires he's looking at is a signal back to her, right? It's like the messages are getting across. I hope she's getting my messages through the wire, because I can't come home. I'm out here fixing a power line. You know, yeah. At first you think it's just a lineman song, but it's really, there's so much deep romanticism in that song. And I bet you you're going to live life with a symphony.
What's unreal is that the guy who gets all that credit is obviously Jimmy Webb, who has imagination as a songwriter to tell that tale. Because there's, like, let's not kid ourselves. I don't know if there really is anything romantic about a power line worker. And, like, you don't set out to write a song today on Music Row, I'm going to write a song about a guy who works for the electric company who misses his girlfriend. Right. Yeah, it's more about a 9-to-5 thing. It's a general thing about a blue collar worker. That's how you describe it today. Yet he was able to make true art with the song Wichita Lineman. And then Glenn Campbell's amazing voice, who's just so silky smooth, probably one of the best male vocalists in the history of our genre. And he was able to bring that song to life. And then it was the symphony orchestra, the writing of Al Delory, who wrote all of those parts. And to signal the line, how unique, you know, it's just like, and here we are, a song is from 1968, and here we are in 2023, still talking about the gravitas of that amazing song. Isn't that amazing?
That is awesome. Well, man, you got me even more excited than I already was.
I'll get your emails if you don't mind, and I'll send you the final of Wichita Lineman, because we did it exactly. Ooh. Like I'm saying, exactly like the record.
Wow, I can't wait, man.
Oh, that's great.
So much to look forward to. Now, when does your show start with Dean Lewis that you're going to be watching?
I don't think it starts till 7:30, so we got 17 minutes.
You got a little
bit
of time, right?
Yeah, we got time.
All right, well, so as you know, with this show, we focus on the songs. And I'm telling you, the first one you did, the South album of the Compass Project, that song is just full of what I would call hits.
Thank you.
I'm serious. I mean, when I go through the notes and I'm just listening to songs, every one of them. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to read off the titles that I didn't cover with you last time. I talked about three of them last time with you.
Yeah.
I want you to pick one, and then we're going to talk about it. Okay. So
Our
Home, which I have the performance you did at the CCMAs. It's really basically dealing with your home of Canada and basically, you know, then Starts and Ends With You is what I shared. I shared that video you did on TikTok where you went to a wedding and crashed it and played Starts and Ends With You there to the crowd. And I thought that was beautiful. Then there's All I Ever Wanted. There's First Place. There's That's Just You. And then there's Live Line in the Sand, which is very much about everything going on in our two countries and the social environment. So of all those songs right now, which one do you want to talk about?
Well, I would love to talk about Our Home.
Our Home. Okay.
And the reason why is because in preparation for the show that we're doing in Calgary with the symphony, they specifically asked for that song. And because it's a really magnificent piece with this drum, with the drums and what I would call like a war cry at the beginning of that song. And I wrote that song initially to be a commercial for Travel Alberta, my home province, had asked if I would write a song for them. It was just a jingle. And I told him, I said, look, I'm not really in the jingle business. It's not my thing. But I would love to write a song about our home. And then it's immediately when I'm like, okay, well, shit, that's the title. So I was in Nashville and I was missing home a lot. My dad was sitting with me in the parking lot of, I don't know, I think it might have been even Target. And my dad said, so what do you love so much about Nashville? And I started talking about, you know, all the things I loved about Music City. And he says, what do you miss about home? And I said, there's just something magical about it. And I'm talking about the farm, really. You know, it's our home. And as I started thinking of all these lyrics, there's something beautiful about it. There's something wonderful about it. There's something magical about it. It's our home. And it fell out of me. And I started writing it in my phone. And my dad looked at me and says, are you writing a song right now? I said, yeah, I am. And so he just got on his phone and started playing, I don't know, some card game. Probably signed into casino.com and started playing blackjack. And I wrote this song in 10 minutes on my phone. And the chorus was really triggered by a lot of the events that were going on in Alberta, which was similar to Florida in like, we were ahead of the curve in terms of like ending a lot of the ridiculous mandates that were going on north of the border. You could go to anywhere you wanted in the United States. If you were an American, you could fly into Canada and you didn't have to be vaccinated. But if you're Canadian returning home, you couldn't return home unless you were vaccinated. Make it make sense. Doesn't matter where you are on the vaccine scale. It's just about making things make sense. But right. I wrote the chorus, yeah, we fight for what's right and we're wild and we're free from the mountains above us. And then all you can see, it's more than just a place where freedom roams. It's our home. And I just love those lyrics. And now the symphony and I, we're making that the opening of the show with this. I told him, I said, I want it to be like a Hollywood movie. I want this to be so magnificent. And it's got that war cry drum beat to the beginning, which is so cool.
Well, I want to play the performance you did right here. This is at the CCMAs.
Oh, is it just me and my guitar?
Yeah.
Oh, I got a cool story about this, but yeah.
All right, cool, cool. All right, let me hit mute here. This is, again, this is a performance at the CCMAs, the big Canadian Country Awards that occur every year, kind of like our CMAs here. It's the Canadian version. This is Brett singing Our Home to the his home country. Here's a little bit of it now. Let me make sure I got the audio right. This is beautiful. And let's just do this right now. I'm going to go to 33 seconds in.
It's our home. Yeah, we fight for what's right. We're wild and we're free from the mountains above us. And all you can see, it's more than just a place. We're freedom roams. It's our home. It's our home.
It was Brett hitting those, holding the note. My God, let me get you back in here. I'll let you know when you're back here. When you held that note, man, it's like, oh my God, I felt every bit of that.
That's powerful. That was powerful.
Well, thank you. Well, it was a last minute addition to the show. Usually they expect everybody to do 1 or 2 minutes on an acceptance speech, right? Well, everybody was doing an acceptance speech of 15 seconds. So the show was light and they're getting to the end of the show and it's supposed to be a 2-hour program and they have one song left plus a couple commercials. So they asked me, they said, look, we need 3 minutes. So prior to that, even though it didn't make it on the YouTube, is they said, hey, can you talk about Canada? Can you talk about country music? Can you talk about Alberta? So I did, and I rallied the crowd in like a Tony Robbins style speech about how important it is to stick together and how we, you know, no matter, I don't know what I said, you know, we're making up for lost time and absence makes the heart grow fonder. And that's why tonight the Canadian Country Music Awards are back in Calgary and we got to make this moment count. So make some noise because Canada's watching. And I said, you know, something like that. And then I played the song. And they needed me to do that because we were light on the show. And they're like, who can just plug in a guitar and just make something happen? And as you also know, all the award shows are fake, right? So like all the music is fake. It's basically glorified karaoke. So you're just playing, you're singing real vocals, but to fake music.
You mean pre-recorded tracks, right?
Exactly. Yeah, pre-recorded tracks. So like there have been times even between us where like my band, the fiddle player played drums and the drummer played guitar and the bass player played steel because it just didn't matter. And only we knew it. We thought it was hilarious. So so on these award shows, but I was just happy to play live music that was plugged into the arena and plugged into the soundboard for TV. And it was the only live performance in like the last 15 years on the CCMAs.
That is something. That you could just go out there. And again, I think you could tell that you wrote that song with your heart on your sleeve. There's a thing now, I don't know what it's like. It's probably the same in Canada, but there really is a whole thing about you can't be proud of your country here.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll never understand it. It's like, let's pull out every bad thing that's ever happened in this country for the last 200 something years and highlight it instead of the good things that have happened. And how other countries still wish they could be like the kind of people that we are, both countries.
Fellas.
It's just ridiculous.
It's unbelievable, yeah.
That's like when we had Neil McCoy on a couple weeks ago, and he was talking about how many days has he gone in a row with saying the
3,000 something days of saying the Pledge of Allegiance in a row?
Every morning.
Well, you know, Neil McCoy was on... he and I were on a country cruise together and he did that every day. He would do it live and then also he would be on the captain's mic. And it was so cool to have him do that. And even though I'm a Canadian, I know for a fact that the American dream is a legitimate dream that billions of people have. Billions of people would give anything to come to America or to come to Canada, but to come, let's just talk about America, and live this incredible life of freedom that everybody gets to live. It's an amazing country, and every state is just as amazing as the next. Every city is extraordinary, but it doesn't come without its faults. Yeah, that's right. The thing about the human spirit, that's the thing about the human experience, is that, of course, America's history is absolutely plastered with issues and challenges and poor choices, but there's no country that isn't. And actually, if you want to think about countries who have done it the best, Canada's up there, United States is up there, and there's over 200 countries. So don't think for a second that you'd want to trade places. It's something that really bothers me also with certain things with like energy and stuff like that, as I'm a big, you know, big supporter of the oil and gas sector, knowing how important it is to our economy and being in Albertan, where, you know, the third largest oil reserves are from my province and everything. And it's so frustrating when celebrities will come up to Fort McMurray, Alberta, fly in their private jet and say, you know, greenhouse gases are terrible, oil is bad, and everything. When Canada has a net zero, Canada's a net zero carbon footprint on the planet, net zero, which means we recycle as much carbon as much as we put out in the world. What a wonderful thing. I bet you never knew that. But we're working so hard to make it even less, where there's giant countries all over the world that don't give two flying you-know-whats about the environment. And Leonardo DiCaprio is not going because he wants to keep his head. He's not going to Saudi Arabia. He's not going to Iraq and saying, hey, listen, Mr. President of Iraq, I think you need to change your laws on the environment. He just thinks he can do it here in Canada and here in the United States because we have freedom. And I applaud the freedom of speech. But if someone's going to talk to me about America, say we don't like America and we don't like our freedom, that's fine. Thank you very much for letting me know. Go live in the third world and tell me if you like it better. Simple as that.
Amen. That's what Ashley said too. It's the truth.
Sorry about the rant here, boys. I thought, supposed to talk about music. I'm getting all political, all fired up here.
But your song deals with it. And you know, songs are used for that. It's just, you know, we were saying something earlier because one of the artists that we were talking about has a song called Overthinking. And Dean was talking earlier about the fear of being canceled. It's like you can't say things without a group of people wanting to get rid of you because they don't like what you're saying. And that is the opposite of freedom. You should be able to, look, Brett Kissel says some crazy things. You should be able to tell him he's an idiot and he's stupid, but not cancel him. Correct. I mean, yeah, call me an idiot, an a-hole, whatever you want to call me. I'm from Jersey. You could call me the F word. But to then go, well, no, you need to lose your job. Oh, now you need to lose your livelihood because of words.
Yeah.
It's just ridiculous.
And let's also call it what it is. Words have a lot of power. There's no denying that. But we also know that the pendulum has swung perhaps too far in the wrong direction, whereas common sense and anybody... Oh, am I still on?
No, you're fine. I just realized at the end, somebody wrote a comment, and then right underneath it, they wrote, don't post that, and I posted it.
Oh, no problem. But for me, common sense is now being outlawed, which is really unfortunate when common sense used to be the leader of all discernment and rational thought, which is many Americans and many Canadians have it, but we're afraid to use it. But I do have a bit of... a thought process when it comes to being canceled. And I don't know if it was Joe Rogan or Andy Frizzella or Grant Cardone or somebody said, you have to care to be canceled. If you don't care, you can't be canceled. So you look at, you know, Jason Aldean, I bet you sleeps like a baby in his beautiful, you know, 10,000 square foot house in Nashville, Tennessee. You know, I don't think he cares. I really don't think he does. So I don't know. It's and that goes for both sides. I hope the right doesn't cancel the left. I hope the left doesn't cancel the right.
We should that's my point is you should be able to say what you want. We just can have the right to disagree or call you stupid. I mean, that's the whole point.
Exactly. But,
Well, that's why Congress was set up to be bicameral, to have debate.
Yeah.
The intention wasn't that we all have the same opinion. It was to create debate.
Right. Now it's just like, I don't like what you're saying. Get rid of you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
it is a mess, but at least we're having a conversation.
Yes.
And a conversation is one of the most powerful things, because in every situation that has been a little bit sticky for me through conversation, and a lot of it has been online, and I've been open to it because I've said some stupid things or I've done some things that have caused some trouble, and that was never my intention. So I love having the conversation, and every single time, not 99% of the time, 100% of the time, I found common ground with the people that were calling me idiots, and we ended up actually patching things up, which is a beautiful thing if you lead with the thought process of, I want to have a conversation, and I do seek to find common ground with you.
Absolutely. See, I love that. See, you could be in politics. Right?
And you know what? I could be in politics, but then my wife, it would divorce me instantly.
Yeah, she would. Yeah.
I said, you know, I might, this is like 5-6 years ago. I said, you know, I think I might consider going into politics, you know, when I'm older. And she said, oh, that would be great. I bet you'd be great at it. And I said, you think so? And she says, oh, yeah. I mean, I would divorce you, but you would still do really well.
All right. Cancel that idea.
Yeah. I love my life too much.
By the way, and, you know, the songs that I was mentioning from the first album, of notes I made, I just want to say, like, in the song First Place, that intro is just killer going into the chorus.
Thank you.
But also, That's Just You. What's interesting is there's a guitar resonance in there that was very much like Muse, a Matt Bellamy sound.
I've not heard that, but what a compliment. Wow.
Do you like Muse?
Yeah, so I saw Muse in Toronto, and I didn't know anything about them, but I went with some friends, and it was an eye-opening, jaw-dropping show.
Unbelievable. Yeah, I went to see Muse. And Matt Bellamy is out of this world in creativity. Now I want to play that clip because I want you to hear what I heard.
Sure.
Because Muse has a song called Uprising, and Uprising is a great song. And but it's this moment in the song. So let me do this. So the song is That's Just You. And by the way, I love your little lyric videos you do.
Thank you.
They're always so, you know, they stick to a theme, and they're always just so great to watch. What song did I say again? I'm not looking at the screen.
That's just you.
Yeah. That's Just You. Okay. let me get the audio right here. So the moment in the song I want to call out here is, let's do this. This was at ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. And if I could find my notes, that'd be a wonderful thing.
Well, as you try to find it, I'll tell you, my guitar player and my cousin, Maddie McKay, really gets a lot of credit for building a sound for me in the studio. And so I'm going to talk with him and say, hey, did you take like a Muse reference to, you know, in this particular track? Because he was all over that song playing so, so well.
Oh, well, I think I got it queued up here. So let's share in the experience here. I want to, and it's the guitar sound in the part of the song that I'm going to refer to. Obviously, sure. it doesn't sound like Muse musically, but it's just a certain sound. So I'm going to hit mute here, and let me reshare the screen. We're going to go to That's Just You and play this part in the song. Let me make sure the audio is right. It is. I got the screen shared. A lot going on here, moving parts. Here we go.
In your out, a blast from the past, but you're so right now. And you know, you drive me crazy, but damn, you're amazing. That's just you, 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 baby, that's who you are. The way you move, got me wrapped around your reckless heart. Cause you're fire in your eyes, all along, it's alright. I guess I'll never figure you out, and I'm probably never going to. Your song.
If you were listening right there in the parts where I was pointing, you could hear a little in there. And that to me was a Matt Bellamy type move right there.
Well, there's also, I was picking up when you talked about uprising, there's a swing on the eighth note that pulls up that's on uprising too, because I was finding myself swinging up. I don't know sure if that's what you were picking up. That's what I picked up on from Bellamy.
Well, I'm floored that both of you with great, great music minds are relating, you know, obviously one of my country songs to Muse. I think that's just the coolest thing. But I remember Maddie in the studio doing those, what I would call like a guitar scream, like row, 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 row. Yeah. And he just, that's kind of been a signature thing that he's thrown in a bunch of my songs. In one of my songs called 3-2-1, I go, whoa, whoa, row, 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 row. That's just kind of been his thing. So I wonder if he got it from Muse, because all guitar players kind of steal each other's licks and get inspired, you know, in different ways. So
I'm going to see if I can get it.
Yeah.
I'm going to see if I can get that. Here it is. It's right here. I'm going to do this real quick.
Okay.
I want you to hear this.
Now, case in point, Matt does like to use the synth guitars. He does some crazy stuff with them.
He does. So watch it. Well, listen to this, Brett. I'm just going to play the audio here. Let me get this going. All right, here we go. This is the part. That was it right there. Hold on.
Absolutely. Wow.
That's it.
Absolutely. That is so cool. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about now.
Yeah. Well, when I heard it in the song, I was listening to it. Oh, look at that. Matt Bellamy, he could take you on tour. You could be like a Muse Brett Kissel. We could do a whole cross genre thing.
And I would open for those guys in a New York minute. I would just go on the road so I could sell their t-shirts.
That's funny. That's what Neil McCoy did for Charlie Pride.
For who?
Charlie Pride.
Really?
Yeah, that was thing. Like he was playing some show and they needed an artist and they invited Neil up to play with, and then they used Charlie's band. And Charlie's like, hey, and he brought him along. And then what Neil would do is he would sell all Charlie's merch before the show and then go up and do his set afterward.
That's so cool. It's amazing. How many guys have started off doing merch for other artists before they became stars? Like Martina McBride for Garth, like Cole Swindell for Luke. You know, like, isn't that cool? And Neil McCoy for Charlie Pride.
That's awesome. Also, I want to call out too, before you go, you do Cadillac Ranch.
Yeah.
A Bruce Springsteen song.
I'm going to tell you, boys, something very embarrassing, but you know what? I may as well be honest about it. I only ever knew that song as a Nitty Gritty Dirt Band song. And I'm the country guy, and I played Cadillac Ranch a million times coming up through the ranks, because I played every bar and small town hall and every wedding in the province of Alberta. Like, if you were getting married on a Saturday, I was the band that would play it. And I thought Cadillac Ranch was a Nitty Gritty Dirt Band song. So I record it. And then I have to register it, right? Because we got to give the royalties and the credit to the songwriter. I'm like, what in the hell? Bruce Springsteen wrote this song? And then I immediately Google it. And like, guys, I must have been living under a rock for 33 years because, yeah, Bruce Springsteen, Cadillac Ranch. Like, how did I not know this?
Well, if it makes you feel better, for years, I thought Blinded by the Light was Manfred Mann. I didn't realize that was Bruce Springsteen too. And I should be embarrassed to say that, but it is what it is.
Or 10,000 Maniacs, which was Joni Mitchell. Because the Night Belongs to Lovers. Wasn't that Bruce too? Yeah, Bruce wrote that song. Yeah, Bruce Springsteen wrote Because the Night Belongs to Lovers, Because the Night. And then Joni Mitchell, or is it Joni Mitchell? No, who's the big artist in New York City? Patty Davis?
I thought it was Patty Smith.
Patty Smith, yeah.
Yeah. So wow. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it's Bruce's song, I think. I mean, make
Isn't
sure.
Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy.
I'm sorry.
I was just talking about that with my wife a couple weeks ago. It's like, who did that before Patty? Was that Patty's song? Who was that? You just answered it for me.
Wait, hold on a minute. Hold on. Let me see if I'm right. I could be wrong here.
Well, if you get a chance, though.
They co-wrote it. Patty Smith and Bruce wrote it together.
See, that's really cool. That's super cool. But Dean, if you get a chance to listen to our version of Cadillac Ranch, we beefed it up. It's not even, It's other than having a fiddle in it, it's like we rocked it up. I think if Bruce Springsteen ever heard it, I think he'd be proud.
Oh, I'm sure he'd dig it. I'll definitely be digging it.
All right, a couple more. So the East album, I didn't even talk about the songs from that. The song that there's three songs that really hit me on that album, like hard. You know, when I've been listening to it, Drive.
Oh yeah, thank you.
That Coastline, and Port Colborne. At Port Colborne is really about a small town. It's like a Bruce Springsteen song. It's all about a small town.
Yeah. And a story of, you know, of someone who's underprivileged and overlooked. You know, a young girl, you know, who gets pregnant and has a little kid. And of course the man is nowhere to be found. And my favorite line in that song is the second verse. The whole second verse, it goes, she's got her pretty young hands in a Goodwill bin. She's got an eye for a bargain. She keeps the other on him, referencing her little son. She wonders who's going to love them two for one and make the rain stop falling. Because it's a dirty little town, Port Colborne is. Like it's. And, oh, and we wanted to make it very cold. Like we wanted to, like we had real sounds of the waves. We had that Irish tin whistle. Like it's meant to be a frigidly cold song. And I really hope that it came through, you know, on the recording for that track.
Well, like a fellow Canadian, Gordon Lightfoot, you're like channeling his singer-songwriter ability in that song. It's very Gordon Lightfoot of you.
Thank you.
Those are beautiful lyrics.
Yeah, let me play a little bit of because it's worth hearing. You know, I have that part queued up that Brett just talked about. It's that line right there, and it's so beautiful. This is so good.
She loves him. She's got her pretty young hands in a Goodwill bin. She's got an eye for a bargain. She keeps the other on. She wonders who's gonna love them two for one and make the rain stop falling. Cause it's a dirty little town, Port Colborne is. There's not a lot of places cold as this. As the rent goes up while the sun goes down on a sad and heartbreak harbor town. And she loves.
So I think what it really does, Brett, is, you know, singer songwriting of the 70s was so country too. I mean, it's really, they're just like hybrid things together. That's where really that brought me back to the singer songwriter days. It was such that type of storytelling, story writing, beautiful song.
Well, I so appreciate you saying that, and Dolly Parton fancies herself a song teller, a teller of stories, a singer of songs. So she just put them together and calls it a song teller. And for me, I ain't no Dolly Parton. There will never be another Dolly Parton. There's only one. But I wanted to make sure that in that East record that I would double down my efforts as a songwriter and as an artist to take everybody on a journey that was very meaningful. And it all circles back to what we talked about at the very beginning about the power of a true record. And so making an album with these songs and having you talk about that song in particular, or talk about my song I wrote called Drive, which I wrote by myself, which is all, it's all a true story. Like if you listen to the lyrics from top to bottom, it's a true story for me and it's a true story for my wife. So with all that being said, it's like, it's, we give anybody who cares to listen, we give you an inside look as to who I really am and who we really are. And that's the beautiful thing about art.
Yeah, somebody's asking, have you done any Christian music, like any spiritual music?
No, I haven't. I've written with so many different Christian artists and songwriters and producers, and I find a lot of inspiration that comes from them. But the reason why is because up until recently, I've never had a relationship with God. this is interesting. I'm a believer and I'm very spiritual now, but I grew up in an atheist family. Like my grandparents and my parents did not believe in God. It wasn't dark. I enjoyed my upbringing, but it was no. Like and the other half of the family was agnostic. So it wasn't until I met my wife, until I moved to Nashville and I started going to Cross Point Church, and I realized this world is too unbelievably amazing. And miracles happen to me in my life all the time, that they can't be explained by science. They can't be explained away by anybody with a degree. It has to come from divine source. And what is divine source? That is God. That is God-like. That is spirituality. So I've never done any Christian music, and I'd actually be afraid to do any Christian music, given not that I'm embarrassed of my background, but it would not come from an authentic place because I don't have a relationship with Jesus at this particular point in my life. And I've never had a relationship with any church or any type of religious aspect. So I love Christian music greatly, and I will listen to it regularly because it inspires me to the highest level. It really does. But I don't know if I ever will do Christian music, maybe because I'm a little embarrassed of that, and I don't think it would be authentic.
You know, Brett, years ago, I was in the education space in a job, and I worked very closely with physics professors. And one of the things that really amazed me quickly is the number of physics professors who are very strong in their faith and would say, when you understand the universe and you see the complexities of it and the math within it, you can't sit there and say it's all random, that there has to be an order or something behind it. And that was really amazing for me to hear that over and over from physicists.
Right.
That's really unique. And, you know, there will always be people that, you know, will try to explain it away. But what I love is the fact that you don't need any explanation. Sometimes you can just receive God's gifts or gifts from the universe, gifts from divine source, from light, and you can just enjoy them for what they are and just be a good person and do good with the gifts that you've been given, and not try to explain it away with any type of scientific formula. So for me, that's just a big part of my own personal mandate now, and to raise my children, you know, with way more love and a lot of spirituality, because I feel that it's very, very important.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting, Brett, because I had the opposite. For many years, I grew up in a very religious environment. And I think from the alternative side of that is, what I learned was to develop an open mind to things. I think in a lot of religions, what happens is you get closed-minded, which is where like an atheism can come from, is you're like judging, oh, you're this, you're not going here. Oh, you're this, oh, you're going to face judgment. And it's like, but to me, it's all about how you treat people and how you would treat the earth and the environment is really the godlike thing. And so lyrics and songs are used to inspire. I just saw somebody right in here. You write music that's uplifting and encouraging. And that's what I think is beautiful, is you don't have to put a label on it to put out a song that makes somebody feel godlike without putting a moniker on it. And I think that's a beautiful thing you do with your songs.
Well, thank you. Thank you for saying that. I mean, I don't know if I set out to do that with intention at the very beginning, but I wrote a beautiful song today with a very good friend of mine named Jesse Fraser. And Jesse's had extraordinary success in Nashville writing for, I don't know, so many of yours and my favorite artists. But we didn't set out to write an uplifting song today, but it just came out of us. And we're very proud that we wrote a song with such a beautiful message in a world, in this country music world, full of honky-tonks and heartbreaks and sometimes a quick buzz. We wrote a song that I think could stand the test of time, that will be as true today as I hope it'll be in 50 years as it was 50 years ago, with some very general themes of how best to live one's life. And it's called Let Your Horses Run. And I'm so proud of that song. And I think it'll be on a future record. And the two of you will hopefully remember this conversation and say, I remember you told us about the day you wrote it.
Well, you're going to come back and talk about it. What's going
to
happen?
I'd love to.
And I'm excited to hear it.
You better. I know you got a show to go to next door. But I can tell you that again, those out the South album is out, and so is the East album. The West album's coming. There's also a song you just did with Cooper Allen.
I was going to ask if I can give that song a plug, because I'm super excited about how well that one's doing. It's rocking and rolling right now.
Do you have to go right now? You got 2 more minutes?
Absolutely. I got 2 minutes.
I wanted to play a clip of it for everybody because I want people to see this. This is an actual live performance video. Again, from the CCMAs. This is YouTube performing it live, and it's so good live. That's why I wanted to highlight it here.
Thank you.
There's just something about a live performance. Now, just watching you two feed off each other is just another beautiful thing in this world. So let me do this. Let me hit mute. Again, this is a song that's out right now with Cooper Allen, Two of Us. This is the video from the CCMAs. Let me make sure I got the audio right. So, no, I don't. Got that fixed. Got it shared. Okay, here we go. Here it is. All right, I want everybody to check it out. First of all, I like what you two did there in swapping your shirts.
Oh, you noticed that, eh?
Yeah, I saw that. Cooper's wearing your shirt and you're wearing his shirt.
And the band, I got the band all t-shirts. I said, hey, you know, just in our group text, I said, name me some dynamic duos that you love. And so my drummer, you know, said Wayne and Garth. You know, from Wayne's World, my fiddle player said Step Brothers. Another guy said Dumb and Dumber. My piano player said R2-D2 and C-3PO. So we had dynamic duos on all of our shirts. They didn't get much camera time, but I thought it was really, really cool to have me and Cooper switch shirts. And that was my idea. I said, hey, Cooper, how do you feel about wearing a Brett Kissel shirt on TV? I think it'd be hilarious. So we got some good traction on it.
That song very much, when Cooper sings that song, you hear a lot of Kenny Chesney in him. And that, you know, that is a type of song that is just a blue collar, kind of like Take This Job and Shove It a little bit. Little Johnny
Payton. Absolutely. That's exactly what we wanted when we wrote that song. We wanted to channel a little Take This Job and Shove It. We wanted to channel It's 5 o'clock somewhere. You know, I ain't had a day off now in over a year. So if the phone's for me, you can tell him I just sailed away. And take that one last straw, put it in a glass. Too much work, work, boss, man can kiss my ass.
That's right.
Yeah, I just love it. It's we're getting a lot of traction with that song.
Yeah, it was great to watch. And I just love watching you in your live performances and the crowd reactions. And I mean, you've been playing arenas and I love that one where you did shows with Garth Brooks. So, you know, the sky's the limit for you right now, man.
Well, I sure hope so. But I mean, that's what's the saying? From your lips to God's ears. So I sure hope so. And I hate that I got to go because, as you know me, like I would stay and I'd talk for another hour if I could. But
I made you late for an Edmonton Oilers national anthem.
Once I was almost late, but I think it's kind of now custom with our conversations, Dean, just so you know, it's always, it's custom. You're never going to get me like what we've also done an interview. I think I was in a tractor. I was out shooting hogs. Yeah.
Nice.
There you go.
Nice.
You're awesome, Brett. Thank you so much.
You guys, I just hope you have a great rest of your evening. And thanks for letting me call you.
Yeah, man.
Thanks, Brett.
Have a great night, Brett.